Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information. So talk to me about your relationship with, well, let's say county fairs and county fair rides. We can also broaden this to amusement park rides.
Well, I think there's a big difference between county fair rides and amusement park
rides.
Great.
So this has become the divide.
Well, you know, amusement park rides are permanent structures that are built to stay in one place.
Sure.
And follow quite a bit of safety protocol.
Sure.
And county fair rides arrive on trucks.
Death
and
traps.
Set up. They're still fun. Still done them. You know what I mean? Oh, no, but I do. I like them. I go on them. I enjoy them.
Are you of the ilk of both or just one or the other?
Oh, no, I do both.
You do both.
I do both.
See, I feel like I fall more into the, like, I can handle the county fair rides more than I want to handle the amusement park rides.
See, and I think I come from the other end of that, even though I tolerate the amusement park rides.
Yeah.
I will tolerate the county fair rides.
Yeah.
I love amusement park rides. Now, that said, I don't love a Ferris wheel only because I get frustrated by things that are slow and deal with heights. Like, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm. And waiting.
Well, not necessarily that. It's just sort of like, let me put you in a, you know, a high, like if it were like constantly going around.
Right.
Like there was constant motion, I would get it. But Ferris wheels are always just like, I mean, you just sit there. I just, and
well,
like, there's
don't you
no.
Think that's like a bygone amusement that like has still somehow broken through to our modern era, like, you know what I mean? Like,
I think you mean like slip through the cracks.
I think
so. Into the modern
we
era.
Still are just like enamored. They still keep making
they
them.
Still keep
they
making
still
the
keep
London
them.
Eye the, yeah, like there's one in Seattle, right. Like, I mean, there's, you know, and yeah, it's just sort of like, I am like so uninspired by the idea of just like getting into this floating gondola and just like slowly
circling,
sitting in the, like, I'm like, get me off. Like, if we're not moving, like the movement is interesting to me. It's the sitting there in the air, thinking something's wrong, thinking that I'm stuck, thinking I'm going to be here forever, thinking like they're going to have to send a truck with a ladder to get me down and it's going to be horrible. Like, that's where my mind goes. So I don't like that. But no, I like amusement park rides for the most part. What is your relationship to amusement park rides?
It depends on where we're at. Like, I'm of that, like, maybe I'll go on it. Like, maybe. I don't love roller coasters. I will tolerate them.
Yeah.
And most of the time, it's because I'm with you. And you're like, you're going to stop your belly aching and you're going to come on this ride. It's pretty much it. But
well,
like,
I did get you to go on the Avalanche or the Everest coaster.
You're like, oh, it's not bad.
I was like, oh, it's not bad. And then like it like flew by and I was like, yeah, that's another ride. And you bought it. And then we got on the Everest ride and you were like, this feels like a roller coaster. And I was like, yeah, it is.
Lies in
you,
the seat.
You lied to me. And I went, I did, to get you on this ride.
Yeah.
And then you had a great time.
Yeah.
You liked it.
Mm-hmm. That's usually how my life goes.
You
gotta like trick
it.
Me into it.
I know.
And
trick you
good.
Into joy.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. I, the first sort of thrill ride I was ever on was Tower of Terror.
Ugh.
And I loved it. And that was because I was, my mom was working. I think I've told the story before, but my mom was working in Orlando and was going to be working on site at Disney World. And I was like, I don't know, 9 or 10 mm-hmm. years old. And I was like, you are not going to Disney World and not taking me. And she was like, I have no one to watch you mm-hmm. while I work. And I was like, then I'll watch myself. I'll go by myself to the parks. I know I can make my way around.
I've never heard this story.
I've never told you this. And I was like,
as a 9 year old?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my uncle still lives, as you know. Yeah. We've stayed with him in Orlando. And so we would go stay there and go to the parks sometimes when I was a kid. You know what I mean? And like occasionally we would like spring and like stay in a hotel maybe on site.
Sure.
But
this is where I could come for you about privilege because you have so many times for me.
So, but that time, like her company was paying for her to stay on site.
Mm-hmm.
And she found this program called Camp Disney that allowed kids to, like, you could drop your kids off. Mm-hmm. It was essentially daycare-like, but it was not cheap, apparently. But I think that her company, I don't know if they covered it or not. I don't think they covered it. I think my mom had to pay for that. But they had all these activities during the day that they would just bring kids to. And, like, it wasn't the same group of kids that was signed up every day.
Sure.
It was like, it could be for, you know, mm-hmm. Who knows what group of kids it was. Yeah. But I remember getting there and they were from all over the world and they were the kindest people. And I would have never met peers that were my age that were kind, you know, growing up in the South. But they were the coolest kids. And I remember they were just like, what's your name? What do you like? Awesome. Great. Let's do this. Like there was no bullying all day, mm-hmm. which was lovely and a new experience for me. So we went to like, Disney has this giant swamp. We went to the swamp and saw a bunch of alligators. And then like we went and saw we all walked into MGM at the time is what it was called. And we saw the Beauty and the Beast show and we got a backstage tour and got to meet all the actors. And then we had extra time. So they let us skip the line to do the new ride, Tower of Terror.
Oh.
All of them were dying to do it, and I was scared to death. But I was like, they all think I'm cool, and so I'm going to do this ride.
Cool.
I got to keep the cool. So I did the ride and loved it.
And pooped my pants.
I did it. And you know what's funny is there was a girl in the group who was too afraid to do it. None of them
judged her,
said anything. Mm. And I just was like, oh, this is how...
This is community.
People can interact. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I remember that.
Community through amusement.
Literally.
I'm looking for adventure. I want to follow on the trail. Or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sail. Get up when the stars still fill the sky. Don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real. You can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national park.
Father, you will follow you there.
At the national park.
Father, you will follow you there.
National Park.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
We would like to acknowledge that while visiting the land, also known as Gateway Arch National Park, that we are on the traditional and stolen land of the Kickapoo, Kaskaskia, Osage, Miamia, Ugakpa, and Ocheti Shikoan people. Okay, well, onward and upward, quite literally.
Literally. I think it is funny how, like, the Wind Cave and Gateway Arch, we didn't necessarily intentionally place these in this order in our calendar this year. I mean, we did, but not for this reason.
No.
But we did do these one right after the other.
It's true. So, when we last left, we had exited Wind Cave, exited South Dakota, made our way to Omaha. Somewhere
Omaha.
In Middle America.
Yeah. So we went to Omaha for the night.
To spend the night.
Where we stayed in a place like a Holiday Inn mm-hmm. and just collapsed and did not move from those beds for hours.
We floofed is what we did.
We floofed indeed.
We floofed hard.
Hurdle dirtling, as they call it in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
We knew that then we would have to be, you know, headed out the next morning to head to St. Louis.
Right.
Which was going to be another 6-hour drive.
Yeah. We took our time because our arrival
festival in St. Louis on this day was intentionally going to be much later because originally we were driving all the way from Wind Cave, which would have been 15 hours in total. So we weren't getting there with anything on the itinerary to do other than to just arrive. We drove from Omaha down the edge of Nebraska and Iowa and then Kansas and Missouri until we hit Kansas City. And at this point, we basically just banked our way east and headed directly to the opposite side of the state.
That's right. And after a lengthy...
A lot of empty highway.
Yeah. But like...
cornfields.
But not nearly as empty as like the South Dakota highway.
Oh, not like desolate. Like if you were... if you were stranded, you would die here, kind of.
So, I mean, that is what it felt like.
Yeah.
No offense, South Dakota.
The North Dakota and Montana highways, too, also.
Oh, yeah. So, after a lengthy drive, we arrived in the Tower Grove East section of St. Louis, which is southwest of the Gateway Arch and right next to the edge of Tower Grove Park.
So, we opted to stay here in the city because it was a recommendation of a family member of mine, a second cousin, who lives in St. Louis, but unfortunately, they weren't there at the time because we were gonna like stay with them, and he was jazzed to have us, and he was like, actually I have a business trip that I have to take. It's our first one since COVID, because this was only the first summer, second summer after, and he's like, I'm not gonna be there. But he's like, I'd still recommend staying up in this area. It's really nice. There's a lot to do. He gave us a ton of recommendations for food, for breweries, for all those sorts of things. So it was very picturesque up here. And it was very beautiful. St. Louis felt very lush, at least in this section of the city, especially because we were right on the edge of the park. When we got in, because I think we probably got in the late afternoon, just because we didn't leave. We were kind of leisurely on our exit time from Omaha because we had the availability. I think we stayed right till checkout. So we arrived kind of like late afternoon, early evening. We unpacked. We were staying in an Airbnb that we were with the folks that hosted. So it wasn't like our own space.
Well, we basically had the second floor.
Yeah. But yeah,
essentially
they were super great folks. They gave us a lot of recommendations. We talked about what we were up to, where we had come from. We just sort of, after we unloaded and took some time to like not be in the car, meandered the city a little bit, kind of walked around the park and everything.
We found at the park, there was the Missouri Botanical Gardens. So we walked through there. The park right there is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Such a great park. We walked all around there because, again, I mean, at the end of the day, we're people who like to explore on foot, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we found dinner at a place nearby. Mm-hmm. I believe it was
Thai, I'm pretty
Ethiopian.
Sure.
Ethiopian.
Oh, it was Ethiopian.
It was
That's
Ethiopian.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it was delicious. And then we headed back toward the Airbnb where we crashed.
And we took a look at what we were going to end up doing in the next day. We really wanted to sort of have a plan for ourselves. We had only budgeted two nights in St. Louis. So, and one day, essentially. And that day was just for the Arch. And we wanted to really kind of see as much as possible while we were here. So enter our marathon walks, making
That's
a comeback.
Right. They did make a comeback because we did look into, we were like, well, let's, you know, like we had a full itinerary the next day when it came to like engaging with Gateway Arch and like doing Gateway Arch. We had tickets to go up in the Arch. We had tickets to the museum. We had tickets, not to the museum, but we had tickets to see the film. We also had tickets to do the riverboat. We had things to do, but we also wanted to see St. Louis.
Right, because neither of us had been.
So we opted to walk all the way from our Airbnb to the Gateway Arch.
Right.
In an effort to also see the city while we did it.
And also to kind of get some steps in, because we had been clocking some serious miles on this trip, and we had sort of like hit a few very low point days. Like Wind Cave wasn't a lot of mileage, then we drove to Omaha and floofed, then we were here. So we're like, let's actually get on our feet and like not be in hiking boots. Won't that be lovely? It only was about 5 miles
from our Airbnb. Yeah. It was a great, I mean, honestly, it was a great walk, and it was a flat walk.
Yeah.
So, and what was great, we also knew that it was going to be warm. So we were able to just, you know, wear shorts, and we were able to dress a little bit, like not in hiking clothes on this day. And that was kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
We got up that morning and we set out and we walked. It was kind of a fairly straight shot. We had to like get on a couple of other streets, and then it was like one straight shot all the way down to Gateway Arch. So we did that.
Yeah. We did, as Dusty mentioned, plan to do more than just walk the grounds of the arch. What we did is, and this is something to do ahead of time, just so you can ensure that you have the availability. It is free to go through to the museum and to walk the grounds, but in order to do the arch itself, in order to go up in the arch, in order to see the movie, in order to take the boat ride, you had to buy tickets. And so we kind of bought for kind of the early edge of things, and so we had plenty of time to do other things if we wanted to.
And you don't. Then we ended up having like essentially like a full day of like touch points to like hit.
Yeah. The tickets you don't buy through recreation.gov. They're bought through gatewayarch.com. And again, just something to recommend to definitely buy ahead of time. When we left in the morning from our Airbnb, we walked until we hit South Compton Avenue and basically walked at least a mile before we turned onto Park Avenue. And this essentially took us down to the arch area. We kind of got at this point under some, like, this is where city infrastructure comes in. And it was a lot of like overpasses and things like that. So we were in like a little bit more of like, I'd say like the industrial part of the city as we were walking towards the end, as we were close to the arch. But the neighborhoods beforehand were pretty lovely, especially walking down Park, if I remember correctly.
What did these neighborhoods remind you of?
It felt like just like any sort of like smaller section of a city that like was quaint. Like I think about in Philadelphia, like Queen Village and like that area, or even like Northern Liberties, like just some smaller parts of a city that aren't the main hub of the city.
They're definitely
like those outskirty neighborhoods,
but there were brownstones, there were, you know, row houses, if you will. Definitely parts of it reminded me of Providence, some of it reminded me of Jersey City, some of it reminded me of definitely Philly.
But
what I do remember is prior to going is there were a lot of people in New Jersey who love St. Louis and were like, oh my God, just wait till you go. You're going to love that city.
Yeah. And there were a few museums that we were told to try to hit.
And we didn't end up having time to do it, which was such a bummer. But like,
I think stuff might have been closed too. We were there on a Sunday or a Monday.
I think we were there on a Saturday.
Okay.
And so there were things that just weren't open on that day. So it was a bummer. And by the time we had arrived the day before, it didn't work out.
Right.
So anywho.
So as we got closer to the downtown area and kind of past the neighborhoods and into the industrial part, we definitely started to smell something that was very akin to dog food, which was when we realized as we were walking that we essentially were walking right by the Purina factory.
It really did smell like dog food.
It did.
Like, for like three blocks.
Yeah. So that was like, you know, an experience to be had. I wonder how the dogs of the area respond to that.
I know if I were a dog living in that area, it would just be like food all the time. Bark, 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 bark. I'm sure you get nose blind to the like the dog food smell at some point.
Yeah.
I'm sure it doesn't take that long.
Yeah.
And it wasn't unpleasant.
No. I mean, that's because you and I are here to tell you all about the wonders of Purina dog food. Not a sponsor. After the factory, the Purina factory, we made our way past Busch Stadium, which is where the St. Louis Cardinals play. And we went through Ballpark Village, which was pretty interesting. It's like a very little community of like sports bars and things that are like create basically right around the stadium. And they had some just like streets that were then just pedestrian walkways. It's kind of, it makes a lot of sense for like the overflow from the games, I guess, to be here. But this was sort of like, you could tell you were in like an area that was much more commercialized and upkept. And it's not very far from here for us to get to the arch. Like it's pretty present at this point. We couldn't see it exactly yet, but it doesn't take us too much longer to walk past Ballpark Village to start to see the arch on the skyline.
In short, seeing the arch, the thing is huge.
Yeah.
It's enormous. And more on that after the break. Hey, everybody. We are actively planning our hiking for this year. And so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about. We're marking them up and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon travel guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon travel guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon travel guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. Okay, so we have a corrections corner to offer.
Okay.
We have to thank our friend Katie from Big and Little Parks. She's got great stickers and great merch. You should definitely check it all out. Mm-hmm. Who sent over something that said, alliteration is in fact sound or letter. So we are in fact both correct.
You know that that thrills me.
Uh-huh. Mike is going to take that with him.
Forever.
And it's going to fuel him for the next, like, 2 weeks.
I really wanted whenever, to just say that I was right and you were wrong.
Whenever he's down, he'll remember, like, the last moment he was correct, and it will refuel him and reignite him.
The sun will come out.
When I'm right. Bet your bottom dollar that I'm right.
Yep.
And you're wrong.
There we go.
There it is. Yep. So in this case, we are in fact both correct. We played an alliteration game last episode many episodes ago at this point in time, because the episode came out last week. We're recording this now.
Yeah.
And it won't come out for another month. But yeah. Alas, alliteration is both sound and letter, apparently. So even though I would argue that gigantic grateful gnomes is not alliterative, but apparently it is. So in that way, I stand corrected. That's right. And how do you feel about it?
I feel validated.
Great. Validated, vindicated, venerated, if you will.
Yeah, I will.
And
valedictorian.
And a little bit vindictive.
Always.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like we're playing Rhyme Time.
We are. We're playing Rhyme Time. It's one of our favorites.
Okay, great.
Great.
If I were to put on a lip stain and then romantically press them to my itemized thing of groceries, I would have a this.
Is receipt one of the words?
No.
Is list one of the words?
Yes.
A lip stain, a kiss list? No.
Yes, but if I did it in past tense, it'd be a...
Kiss lists?
A kissed list.
Oh, a kissed list. Okay,
there you go.
Great. This favorite warm season of people who fix your pipes.
Plumber summer.
That's right.
That's what I'm going to have next year is plumber summer.
Plumber summer.
Okay. A little thing you sit on with no back support to watch billiards.
A pool stool.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Also, that could be like if you
pooped in the pool.
Pooped in while you're swimming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had a pool stool. Mm-hmm. This sport played on skates if it was exclusively done by small people who ride horses.
What is jockey hockey?
Yeah.
Okay, great. If I were to take a workshop in Olympic National Park about the types of plants that grow there that don't often grow in other places that like to grow in the shade, it might be called this. What green plant?
Like fern?
Mm-hmm. If I'm taking a workshop, I'm what?
I'm a learned fern. Fern learning.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Fern learning.
I'd go on a little fern learn.
A little fern learn. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If I was to get in a car and you would just berate me the entire time, I could be in a car, I could be on a bike, I could be on a horse, and you were just to berate me the entire time while I was doing it, I'd be on this.
What is the hide ride?
Well, ride is correct.
Oh.
But what would
what
you be
doing?
What
is the deride ride?
No, what would you be doing to me if you were like tisking me?
Snide?
What's a chide ride?
Oh, a chide ride. Mm-hmm. I see. I mean, that's what it's like anytime I ride in the car with you.
Exactly.
That's how I feel.
Mm-hmm. And that's Rhyme Time.
Okay, so we are finally approaching the Gateway Arch, and it is enormous, mm-hmm. way bigger than we knew it would be.
Yeah, it's kind of a spectacle to see it. The way we came to it was down Market Street, which is, there's kind of a lawn area here. The old courthouse is here, which is a part of the NPS site. This is all from across the street, so you do have to cross an avenue to kind of get to the arch. There's a lot of lawn and walkway in front of the arch once you cross the street. But before we even get there, it should be noted that this is the smallest of the big 63 national parks.
And
it is itty bitty. This is not the smallest site in NPS, but it is the smallest of the big 63 national parks themselves.
And it is considered one of the big 63 national mm-hmm, parks. Mm-hmm. There's some feelings that some people have that mm-hmm. it doesn't necessarily need to have this designation, mm-hmm. but regardless of feelings about it, it's got the designation.
Right.
So this is one of the 63 national parks.
Yes, and it's a park that you could do
most definitely
in a quarter of a day.
A quarter of a day park. Right in front of us as we're walking up the street, there's this giant paved area with a curved sloping structure emerging from the earth, basically centered on, but in front of the arch itself.
This is basically the entrance to the museum of the Gateway Arch. After walking through this initial section of the entrance, we have to go through an airport security type situation. There's a line. I'm pretty sure we went through metal detectors too. There's a ranger that's talking about kind of like incessantly, like, here are the items you can bring in. It was a pretty long list. I was surprised what was able to be brought into the museum.
I remember somebody did ask out loud, well, what can't we bring in? And the ranger replied, a weapon. Which I would assume people would know, but in open carry states, maybe they don't know that.
Yeah, it's true. Some initial part of the museum feels like an airport or a very posh kind of train station. After going through the TSA-esque security, you get down to the lower level of this atrium area, which is the museum itself or the whole structure of the building. The museum is in this lower part.
So it's like in the ground underneath the arch.
Yeah.
We made sure to have plenty of time this day because we knew what time our ticketed events were, and we wanted to make sure to have time to go through the museum, which we knew we would have to go through first. Fairly certain that tickets are spaced out appropriately, so there's plenty of time for like the ticketed things that you have to pay for, but then also for all of the other things that you don't have to pay for that are available to see while you're there.
It's not always that we have time for a museum in a national park, but this was a very involved museum. The park itself was small.
Well,
so we wanted to make sure that we had a lot of time to invest in the museum while we were here.
We need to talk about the museum real quick, but I want to start off by saying that the museum here, Gateway Arch National Park, is a huge component
right.
to understanding everything about this space.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even I had a ton of questions like, why is there a giant arch? What does the arch stand for? When was it put up here? What was happening before this? What does it represent? Who's putting it up? What are we trying to communicate? Why St. Louis? Like, all of that stuff gets answered in the museum.
Yeah.
Certainly. But in order to do that, it goes all the way back. To understand context and to understand all of it, the museum does a very good job of, like, starting way back and bringing us all forward in a very interesting way. So let's talk about what made this museum a little different than other museums and visitor centers.
When we think about park visitor centers and park museums, they are usually, well, let's think about the function of a visitor center. You know, we talk about this all the time in our summits, you know, when we're in a space. When you think about a visitor center, the visitor center is really the hub for you to understand the park, to talk to rangers, to get the lay of the land. There's often a gift shop component, which there was here as well. There also is rather small museum component in most visitor centers, I would say. I would say the museum in visitor centers in national parks where we've hiked, comparatively to this museum, is much smaller of a component in a visitor center. Would you agree?
Yes, this was certainly much bigger than any museum space I've ever seen for a national park, certainly.
Right. And I feel like those spaces typically are, you know, when we think about museums there, most of the time it's here the animals. Like there, I feel like there's dioramas of animals that are maybe taxidermied
or maybe models
that are showing what the diversity of wildlife is in the park. Sometimes it's, let's talk about the indigenous people that once inhabited this space.
Yes.
Sometimes it's here
and the relationship they still have with the space.
Here are the pioneers who entered into this space, and let's talk about their history, colonialism. There are some visitor centers that stick out in my mind, like Theodore Roosevelt had a really good museum.
Yeah.
And
so did Grand Tetons.
Yep. So did Badlands.
Yeah.
Badlands had a great museum.
Great museum, which was mostly geology centric and fossil centric.
But this museum is very history entrenched.
It is. Yeah. However, the way it is history entrenched is unlike anything I've ever seen. Let's talk about the function of museums for a second, because oftentimes I feel like the function of museums is sort of to like preserve narrative or to sort of like define narrative. And I felt like this particular museum exhibit or this museum wasn't trying to do that. It was rather trying to say, here's what happened. How do you feel about it? What do you think about it?
There were a lot of questions the museum posed back to you.
How does this apply to now? Because things we can't undo, right? There is an arch here. There is a city here. There is the history that brought us here. What now? It was doing a lot of that. Things that the museum definitely covered. It covers St. Louis throughout time, the idea of manifest destiny and where that came from and its role in history, Lewis and Clark, the city fire, railroad expansion, slavery in St. Louis, building this monument, the rights of women, the Louisiana Purchase. It has to go through all of that to get to this arch being built here. It has a tall order.
Yeah. And I think it delivers, though.
I think it delivers. And I like that it delivers without necessarily celebrating anything.
Right.
Because I feel like that's the thing that, like, sometimes museums feel like they have to celebrate things. Let's celebrate the American Revolution in the American Revolution Museum or whatever. But when it is more so about, let's take a look at this thing and bring it into the conversation of now. Because there were quite a few questions. Things challenging phrases like, was the West won? Is that what this group of people would be saying? Is that what this group of people would be saying?
It gave perspective.
Lots of perspective.
It gave lots of perspective from lots of different vantage points throughout history, which I really appreciated. Like, it offered you a gateway, if you will, into the lives of other people, so you could understand better what their experience would have been at any given time that this museum was covering. Especially when we talk about the Louisiana Purchase and the fact that French women who lived in New France could own property.
Or New Spain.
And then as soon as the purchase happened, those rights immediately were gone.
Things we cover in our trail mix about this, but essentially the Louisiana Territory, which was 828,000 square miles, was first controlled by Spain, then controlled by France. And in both of those, the civil code said that women, white women, could own property. And then as soon as the United States took over it, that did not exist inside of the law. So therefore, all of those rights were lost.
And also just the rights of enslaved people and how those shifted dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought that, you know, even as you're going through history and going through time, like Dusty said, you know, the phrase, how the West was won, like that, I feel like there are perspectives there too.
Something that I really appreciated was that in the museum, like fairly early on at the very beginning of the exhibit, it starts off by saying all land here in what we consider the United States that was conquered by European nations was inhabited by Native Americans, was inhabited by indigenous people, and all of it was stolen from them. So it started with that, that there was no confusion about that. And then it was like we were able to proceed with, like, the other thing that I liked about the museum, and I feel like a lot of museums do this because they're borrowing from film or television or books that are trying to lay out a narrative that's like succinct and like beginning, middle, end, because of this, this happened, and look at this celebratory conclusion. I didn't feel like this was trying to do any of that. It was just saying, these are the things that happened.
Yeah.
Thoughts, feelings.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
I feel like since this was probably the museum space that we had some of the most amount of time to go through, because it, to be honest, absolutely go to the Gateway Arch. Can you see the arch? Call it a day. Yeah. Can you go to the arch and go in the arch, you know, go all the way up and be done. Absolutely. But I do feel like the museum is a part of the national park experience, which is why it's free and open to the public. And it's something that is absolutely worth the time to go through.
Totally.
Like, I think if you miss the experience of the museum, you're losing a lot of context for the arch and the history surrounding the city and why the arch is here. And I think it's really a great piece in a park space that is such a small park. Like, this is an integral part of this park. And it really is important to, I think, to view it and to take as much time as you can with it.
The other thing that I liked about this, and I noted this, was that they were really economical about the text on the walls or the text in different sections. Like, there wasn't too many words to read, because I am somebody who likes to read the words on the walls. But when I go and it's like, here is this entire wall covered in small words. But what I also liked about it was that this was in a museum you could go through, and you didn't have to go through it in any particular order.
Right.
Like, you could go through it in a lot of different ways and, like, pick up information from a lot of different things that are happening. Like, there was not, it seemed, an intention for one to have a linear experience.
No. Well, the room was like a giant circle too. So, yeah. And you didn't necessarily go around the circle. You kind of bopped around.
Right.
If you wanted to stay quote unquote chronological, the first section to the right, I believe, was all about New France. And then across the way to the left was where we talk about the Louisiana Purchase,
and then Jefferson.
Jump back to the right. Like, it's kind of like was a zigzag experience.
Right.
So I think they hit all the right notes here. It reminded me a little bit of the Museum of the American Revolution, which is in Philadelphia. Like, yeah. I felt like the same people maybe had a hand in that curation.
I'm curious if they did. I don't know. But we
because it
that.
Definitely felt like that. We spent a large chunk of time here in the museum, which then allowed us the time to basically head to the movie right after. So on the other side of the museum floor, there's another large atrium, which had a waiting area for you to go when you were ready to go up into the arch. It had some models of the arch and pods that would carry you to the top of the arch.
It also had like gift shop, and it also had like food.
It felt like a food court in some ways.
Like over here.
Yeah, like a nicer food court.
The theater for the film, which was also part of the experience that we paid for, was in this section right on the other side of the museum.
So I don't typically acquiesce to movies and parks.
I've gotten a little more better. Amenable, if you will.
Most of them are from the 60s and 70s. Like, I feel like I would like to see the company that updates these because...
Right. Can we hire some folks to do it, please?
Because there's nothing wrong with the video from the 60s or 70s, but not as fast-paced and eye-catching as the modern mind, I think,
it's
needs.
It's always the same kind of music. It's always
like a pan
the same
flute.
Of
in the
like
background.
Pan flute, some water droplets, maybe a sunrise.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there's always some like white person walking through the woods.
And, you know, the words appear as they say,
Bryce
Gateway to
National,
the West.
Right, something like that. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. This was a cool look at the construction of the arch.
That's what the film is about.
Yeah.
The film is about how the arch was constructed.
Right.
Not necessarily
why.
But how?
Yeah.
And it was really fascinating as far as like architecturally to look at this.
The movie itself was about 35 minutes in total. It's interesting to see just how the landscape of this area on the Mississippi is transformed over the time that the arch is constructed. The video is incredibly 1960s. There's a lot of 1960s fashion happening.
Oh yeah.
A lot of facial hair.
A lot of long hair.
A lot of shirtless gentlemen. We got a lot more than we bargained for in this
work
video.
Work in construction. It's true. Mm-hmm. It's true.
It was like a village people concert come to life.
It was. It certainly was. And there were some really fascinating things about how they had to build the thing like simultaneously.
Yeah, on both sides.
On both sides. And then like...
what it was like to have like the keystone piece
go in. The keystone corner, like not... or like the
middle piece
that pulled them together, and how like they didn't line up exactly, and what they had to do in that case, and like all that kind of stuff to like make it happen.
There was tension. I mean, they did a good job, the filmmakers, for making it a documentary, for building some tension there around that like component of, well, this is how everything is capstone together, and what if it doesn't work, and like, you know,
it's true.
It sort of was like,
and also somebody decided to send a film crew, like, and film filmed the whole time while they were building it.
Anyway. Which was a smart move because it is an engineering marvel.
It really is.
It is fascinating to get a glimpse of how it all was completed. After the film, it definitely gave me a whole new appreciation for the commitment and the time it took to construct the arch.
And then we were going to actually get to see the arch mm-hmm. from the inside. And with that,
let's take our next break.
Hey, everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year. And so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about. We're marking them up and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, Annie Scanna.
Annie Scanna.
Mm-hmm.
So explain where this name comes from, because I feel like it's a couple layers.
It's very niche.
Yeah.
Niche is what I said. It's very Friedrich Nietzsche. Annie Scanna is, it comes from Sister Act.
It comes from the phrase, and I'm gonna.
And I'm gonna.
I mean, we could have Anne, and then her middle name is like I'm. Or I'm a gonna or something
no,
like that.
No, doesn't work.
But Annie Scanna is funnier to us. Mm-hmm. It is from Sister Act.
Mm-hmm.
It is from like this one particular moment.
It's from My Guy when they sing My Guy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You best be believing.
No, it's I gave my man the word of honor to be faithful.
And I'm gonna.
Right? And it's
that
like
very
iconically
sassy
given
nun.
By that one nun
mm-hmm.
who used to run the choir.
Right.
Anyway, yeah. Those until of us.
Until Whoopi usurped her role.
The millennial gays who grew up on Sister Act mm-hmm. know that line well. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Annie Scanna.
Mm-hmm.
The last name is Scanna.
Uh huh.
Okay, great. So who is Annie Scanna?
She is a queen that's up for anything.
She's an up for anything
queen.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
She's a daredevil queen.
So how does that manifest in her looks?
I feel like Annie Scanna is kind of like an Evel Knievel type motorbike rider. And
oh.
So she's got like jumpsuit on, like it almost like Charlie's Angel 2 when they're in the motorbike race.
Got
That's
it.
A very gay reference.
But can it turn into a gown?
Absolutely.
I love
yeah.
that.
It's
I love
a transformative jumpsuit.
Great.
Yeah.
I'm into that.
And I feel like she jumps over things in her act. She rides a motorcycle over like cars on the stage.
Oh.
I mean, this is big production drag.
Oh, this is big production drag.
Yeah.
We like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
We like that.
And then
I think she would have to do the pink song from Charlie's Angels too.
Right.
Like for part of like she would do the, you know, motorbike jumping to
yeah.
that song.
Yeah. I do feel like she could do then she'd disappear for a moment and she would do Wrecking Ball. Like a
oh,
Wrecking
I do
Ball would
love
swing
that.
Across the stage.
Yeah.
Like I feel again, big production drag
She's
here.
She's a big time stunt queen.
Mm-hmm.
Big time stunt.
Stunt drag queen.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there's probably like a whole show of big time stunt drag queens. So as we...
And if
as
there's
we,
not, we invite you to.
Well, but I'm saying is like as we create more and more drag queens on the show, we might discover more and we're like, oh, this one belongs in Annie Scanna's big stunt drag show. you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we've just come up with a new market here.
Also, like, I mean, stunting is like a thing that they talk in drag about, like, you know, if you bring stunts into mm-hmm. your show, mm-hmm. not stunts like this, yeah. but like, why not? Why not have a drag queen monster truck show? I'm just like down. I love it. I love monster trucks.
I love monster trucks.
I love monster trucks.
We could have a little slot car racing too.
Hell yeah.
Or stock car racing. Slot car racing is a different thing.
And then we have a number. Mm-hmm. Maybe we have a number. Like I want one of those like giant spheres where they're like doing like motorcycles in the spheres.
Yeah,
all that kind of
stuff. Yeah, I feel like this is also like tiptoeing into Mad Max Thunderdome territory.
Oh, why not?
Like, you know, Tina Turner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And then we have, you know, maybe we have narrative. Maybe there's like a...
their story.
There's somebody... What's her name from Mad Max?
Furiosa.
I mean, that's like a... That is the Charlize drag Theron. Name if mm-hmm. there ever was one. Isn't in the new one, isn't Anya Taylor-Joy playing Furiosa?
Or like that a newer one? Or you mean Fury Road?
There's a new Mad Max coming out soon.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
And now I do.
She's playing.
Oh, okay. It's possible.
I think that's the character she's playing.
All right.
So.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage.
Annie Scunna. All right, so it's time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the big moment has arrived.
Uh-huh. Stop talking about having to go to the bathroom. I do feel like there was some trepidation on your part here. I do remember, and I think a lot of this came from, we talked to Becky a lot about the arch prior mm-hmm. to.
We did.
And she's like, I don't, like, if you're okay with tight spaces and, like, going up into things, then, you know, you'll
go
be
for
fine.
It. Right. Yeah. There is a video that we took while on the little car. Please go to our Instagram to enjoy.
The little car, indeed. After exploring the museum and doing the film and coming back out into the little gift shop, food court, you know, movie theater atrium, it was time for us to line up and get ready to go into the arch, which is sort of like in the back right corner was like the entranceway here.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there... So we went up the one side of the arch, and I'm pretty sure there was an... You could go up the other side too. We had like the tickets for this side.
Yeah, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So also in this space, like almost as soon as you exited the museum, there were some models of what the arch looked like, as well as what the tram cars looked like, mm-hmm. because they talk about in the movie designing the tram cars. Yeah. Highly recommend doing the movie first, then going up the arch, because you actually then get to ride in the tram car they talk about having to build, which like they had to get people who created Ferris wheels, roller coasters, and elevators to work together to make this happen.
Yeah, which was a fascinating combination of things.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do feel like I remember you being like, I don't know how I feel about this. And I was like, okay, well, we're going to do it. Like,
oh, well, we have the tickets.
We were going.
We're going to do it.
So after we queued up in the atrium, they essentially lead you down a hallway or let us down a hallway to a set of stairs that has doors set into the wall on the left. That this all feels very futuristic-y, sci-fi-y.
It does. And Disney.
Yeah. There was
Disney
like an element
ride.
Of Disney
element.
Ride
yeah,
here
definitely.
Happening.
Mm-hmm. They were still operating at the time under some COVID protocols because it was the summer of 2021. So there was still some social distancing happening. We were sent down the stairs in our groups, and then we had to line up against near where a pod was going to arrive.
Right, one of the doors.
And we were going to have to get in. Now, the pods were designed for up to 6 people, mm-hmm. which we're just going to leave that right there for right now.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We just waited by the doors. The group that was coming down from the last experience exited. We were prepared to enter. And both of us at this point were masked because we were inside. I think we were masked the whole time when we were in the museum at this point during our COVID protocol because we had set that up for ourselves ahead of time.
They were tight.
We were ready to get on those pods. And as two people that are over 6 feet tall, they are not a comfortable experience.
No. I was like, we got in and like the two of us fit. I'm not going to say comfortably. No. I'll say we fit. It was like,
maybe a third person could fit in here.
Maybe. But yeah. I was like, how would we get 4 more people in here? That would be horrible.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, and it is, there are no windows.
No.
It's lit. You know what I'm saying? There's lighting inside
there. Well,
there
is the one, you do have a window out.
You have a window out into the machinery, but it's not like
which is interesting the whole way
you
up.
You don't have a window, like, there's no window outside
of the arch. No,
none of
You're
that.
Able to see inside the column you're headed up, which is, from a mechanical standpoint, fascinating.
Totally.
Yeah, especially after seeing the film.
I will say, like, if claustrophobia is real,
this is not your bag.
Mm-hmm. And there's no other way to get up there.
No.
So it's like, okay, well, this may not be an experience for you necessarily.
Yeah.
And that's okay too.
Yeah.
But I didn't necessarily have any claustrophobia triggers at this time. Mm-mm. I don't really totally deal with claustrophobia, but there are some times where I feel like it gets me.
Yeah.
But it was tight, and it felt like, I mean, it felt a little bit like, oh, we're being sent into a rocket ship to go to Mars. To Mars or another planet to live there.
But in a 1960s sort of way.
Totally.
Yeah. Like, it felt like World's Fair.
Without a doubt.
This could have been like the plot of a Men in Black film. Like, the Gateway Arch actually is like a quantum tunnel. Like, why am I not
writing
Men in Black 4 or 5, whatever we're at? Like, I feel like absolutely could have been that.
So the ride itself, luckily, it was relatively short. It was 630 feet into the air.
Mm-hmm.
It took just a couple of minutes to get up to the top. Yeah. It didn't take a long time at all. The pods were designed to calibrate to like keep us level the whole time as it would round the earth,
the parabola, the arch itself,
the curve.
As we curved, we weren't leaning, we were staying level.
The whole time.
Yeah. Eventually we come to a stopping point at the top. It definitely was like, okay, I'm ready to get out now, thanks. And we get out to another set of stairs. This felt very much so like baggage claim steps, like you just got off the plane and now you're ready to go claim your baggage.
Yeah.
Except you were 630 feet in the air. Once you get to the top of these steps, you get to that viewing platform that was like the keystone piece.
It's true.
And this was, I mean, this was the experience you pay for.
That's right.
You have quite a view up here.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
So the ceilings aren't that tall, but it does essentially feel like a hallway with like windows on the side.
Yep.
And you basically like lean forward and like you can look out the windows.
Yeah.
And it is really a fascinating view from up here, you know, and they have some placards that explain a lot of the information that was covered in the film.
Sure.
I guess those are for the folks who
don't see the film.
Didn't see the film, but wanted some info.
Yeah.
There is some interpretive info here.
Mm-hmm. So you're able to see very, very far into the distance here, but because the windows are on an angle, you can essentially see directly underneath the arch and behind the arch a little bit.
And you can see the arch, the bottom parts of the
both
arch.
Both feet
from up there.
It's very weird. It's I shouldn't be able to see under this. This is
but
strange.
You can.
Because you're like at a narrow point here, 630 feet in the air. So you have the perspective to be able to do this. It's very, very interesting and a little disorienting, but in a cool way.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And we only had about 10 minutes while we were at the top.
They keep it tight because what's happening is you have two groups coming up. One group is arriving as the other group is finishing up. Then when the other group shows up, you then depart, essentially, because you have the two different legs.
Up. Yeah. Right,
so that's how they're kind of keeping the system working and tight up there. I mean, you don't really need more than 10. This is a spectacle.
No.
Like, it is absolute spectacle. And it's cool. Like, I was so glad that we did it. Again, if you didn't get a chance to do it, it doesn't sour the experience by any means, especially if heights aren't your jam. But it was really, really neat.
After our time up, you know, in the hallway that is like the top part of the arch, we got back and boarded our return tram. The trip down felt a little faster.
Maybe it was gravity,
anxiety, whatever it was. And we eventually made it back down and out of the tram. And we were like, okay, we did that.
Yeah.
And then we went to the gift shop and we got our patches. And then from here, we made our way outside to the grounds of the park. So we won't be putting this on the Karen Stone scale because there were no hikes involved. So let's go right to our Jeopardy-style trivia. Mike, would you like to get us started today?
Sure. My Jeopardy is titled Arch Nemesis.
Oh, great. Oh, I like that.
Using the term arch as jumping off point. So this is all about protagonists and their arch nemesis. You'll need to name both.
Okay, great.
With the clue. All right. And all different forms of media here. For 100. In Gotham, these two characters would be described as arch nemeses, one a billionaire dressed in a cowl and cape, the other a deranged man in clown makeup.
Who is Batman and the Joker.
Correct. For 200, this Doyle duo were constantly at odds with one another, a brilliant and cunning thorn in the side of a brilliant detective with a sidekick.
Oh, who is Sherlock Holmes? And I don't know his arch nemesis.
Oh.
I don't know.
Professor James Moriarty.
Oh, Moriarty. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
For 300, in Metropolis, this wealthy bald man and this mild-mannered reporter seemingly had no beef, while the reporter's alter ego and this wealthy bald man absolutely did.
What is Superman and Lex Luthor?
Correct.
But Clark Kent and Lex Luthor didn't have beef.
Seemingly didn't have beef.
Okay, great.
Because, you know, he's got to keep a low profile. Those right. glasses. I can't see without my glasses. All right. For 400.
What is Thomas JNB's?
For 400. These Frenchmen, one an inspector and the other a reformed thief, turned someone who runs a business of repute, the mayor of this town, square off through this entire story set against the backdrop of the French Revolution.
Well, I think it's specifically like the battle, some specific battle in French history and not the revolution. I think that purists will come for you.
Okay.
Because they do anytime I say it.
Okay. The purists are coming for you.
What is Jean Valjean and Javert?
That's
of
correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. And for 500, these Greeks, one a god, one a king, have beef throughout this entire journey, which turns a simple return trip from the war into a journey that is quite arduous.
Oh, is Odysseus one of them?
Mm-hmm.
Who is Odysseus and Zeus?
No. Who would be responsible for getting a ship home?
Oh, Poseidon.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Because, like, Odysseus is like, Poseidon, you ain't anything. Look at me.
That is
and
right.
And then he angers the gods.
Like that.
So
okay,
he
great.
Does behave like a spoiled little brat.
My inspiration for this category will be revealed in the first $100 clue.
Great.
But the title of this category is called Who Arted?
Okay.
And it's all about public art installations.
Great.
Okay, so for 100, this piece of public art appeared throughout Central Park. It was interactive in that people could walk through them. It featured orange metal structures and orange fabric and was created by the artist team Christo and Jean-Claude.
What are the gates?
That's right. Mm-hmm. So now you get where that the gateway arch.
Yeah, I got it.
Inspired this. Mm-hmm. For 200,
Christo and Jean-Claude.
This sculpture in Chicago is something we both saw on our 2021 road trip. It was created by artist Anish Kapoor and is properly named Cloud Gate, however, goes by this nickname.
What is the bean?
That's right. Mm-hmm. It's the thing people look at and take mm-hmm. photos in because mm-hmm. of the reflection.
Mm-hmm. It's giant.
For 300.
Millennium Park.
Correct. This public art installation was created by artist Frank Warren, who asked people to anonymously submit personal admissions on small cardboard pieces of mail and send them to him in the mail. And then he publicly displayed them in DC for everyone to see, and he later published many books full of them.
What is Post Secret?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I love a good Post Secret.
I do too. For 400, this piece of public art was created by American pop artist Jeff Koons, who created the iconic Lady Gaga sculpture featured on the cover of the Art Pop album. This piece of public art is the one I'm talking about in this clue, is a living, breathing garden of flowers in the shape of this adorable young animal who might play fetch or give you a paw.
What is puppy?
That's right.
And I saw that sculpture. When I was a kid. He does it in lots of different places, but it was at Rockefeller Center.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I saw it, where the tree typically would be.
It's usually in Spain.
Okay.
But it does tour, or he does them elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And then for 500, this statue by artist Kristen Vachal appeared overnight on March 17th, 2017 at the New York Stock Exchange in front of this other famous statue by Arturo de Modica.
So who is it the brave girl and the bull?
Like, it is, yeah. Essentially, I'm going to give it to you.
Okay.
It's the fearless girl and the charging bull.
Okay.
And that is Who Arted.
Mm-hmm, but you also farted.
The This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeattheNationalParks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeattheNationalParks.com. And that's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram, on our website, and in the Gaze Shop is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariello Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. This episode was edited by me, Dustin Ballard.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we are on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as Ocean County, New Jersey.